Don't you ever feel like you've seen it all before? We got Sky Plus a few years back. You know, it's great being able to fast forward through all the adverts now. But when you do have to sit through them, they are so tiresome. They make exactly the same claims as the old products that they're replacing. Don't they? You know, haven't we been told our washing powder will get our undies whiter than white since the 50s? Haven't we? Haven't we been here before? You know, life goes on and it's just full of incidentals. Nothing really changes. Everything's completely meaningless. There is fashion. There is fad. Some is good, some is bad. But the joke seems rather sad because it's all just a little bit of history repeating. And no, those lyrics aren't new either. I borrowed them. So if you're not exactly wrapped with excitement over 2016 and what it might hold, you know, I quite understand, and I think this teacher would do as well. Ecclesiastes itself might be 3,000 years old, but, you know, exactly this is the point. What is new? What's new, really, about life? So what do you do about that? Do you just kind of resign yourself to accept this tragic existence, as he calls it? Did you see that? In verse 13, the tragic existence God has dealt us, apparently. Or do you fight heroically to work out this meaning of life thing once and for all? You know, this thing which has eluded you so far. What do you do? And so that's why we come to this funny old book, this book of Ecclesiastes. It starts with this extraordinary statement: everything is meaningless, completely meaningless. In Hebrew, it says, if you're translating it word for word, something like, meaninglessness of meaninglessnesses. Meaninglessness of meaninglessnesses. All is meaningless. You got the point about the meaningless thing. And that word in the Hebrew, it's quite broad. It means, every time I've only worked this out really from reading the book and looking all the times he uses it, but it means that sense of emptiness and frustration and vanity and futility and waste of time and effort and something that makes no sense and is completely pointless. That's what he means. That's what he's saying everything is. What kind of teacher teaches that everything is pointless? Imagine that in a school. Today, class, I was going to teach you some maths, but I'm not because it's completely pointless. Or what about in Sunday school? I thought I'd tell you a little bit about God today, but no, I won't because it's completely pointless. Really? Everything is pointless? Thankfully, I'm completely convinced that the teacher is wrong, that everything is not completely pointless. It's not often I say the Bible's wrong, but in this case, I do. Because actually, I think that's what the Bible says about Ecclesiastes, and I'll come back to that. But over the next few weeks, we're going to explore then how, in fact, there is meaning in life. Not that we necessarily understand everything that happens, or understand the, you know, allegedly higher purpose that this or that fulfills, but that ultimately my life, your life, every life, life itself, it does have purpose and value and meaning. And how can I say that so confidently? Well, firstly, because that's what I see in the Bible. And secondly, because of Jesus. And so we'll come back to that as well. But let's start off. I'm going to use, in this opening chapter, there's a couple of phrases that are used a couple of times. And one of these is chasing the wind, and the other is under the sun. So I'm going to start off by talking about chasing the wind. My title for the message this morning as a whole was Pointless Wisdom. Verse 12 here in chapter 1 starts with the words, I, the teacher. The previous 11 verses are kind of an introduction, and then the teacher himself kind of gets going. And here he speaks for himself, and he claims to be none other than the King of Israel and the son of King David. He says that in verse 1. So this, in theory, this is Solomon. This is the king of Israel, most famed in all of history for wisdom. And yet, if you look at verse 17, he says that pursuing wisdom is as pointless as chasing the wind. This king, this teacher of his people, wanted to pass on to them what he'd learnt, because even as king, and you know, that's got to be, you know, the most important job or whatever, isn't it? Even as king, he felt this drag towards meaninglessness. So he tells us about his heroic quest for understanding and wisdom and knowledge. You read through those verses 12 to 18. He tells us about how he studied and he learned and he observed and he explored and he pursued. And this is where it got him. Nowhere. Back in the summer, we celebrated Helen's mum's 70th birthday. Don't tell her that I told you, but we had done that. We'd bought a helium balloon and stopped in the Scottish coastal resort of Largs for an ice cream. They've got this huge, brilliant ice cream parlour there. And I went to retrieve something from the car boot, and you can guess what happened next. As soon as I opened the boot, the balloon flew out and sped across the car park of a neighbouring hotel. Helen said afterwards that she'd never seen me move so fast. You know, it could have been the Grand National, the way that I was vaulting walls and bushes to chase that balloon. And I got it. I'm delighted to report that our precious solitary balloon did make it all the way onto the dining table of the birthday function room before the next day it was completely deflated and ended up in the bin, because it's a balloon and that's what they do. You know, the teacher says that pursuing wisdom is like chasing the wind. It's even more pointless than risking your neck to chase a balloon across a car park. Here's the great discovery he makes. Verse 18. The greater my wisdom, the greater my grief. To increase knowledge only increases sorrow. The surprising truth that he discovers is that the more you know, the less happy you are. Perhaps ignorance is bliss. If all you find out by studying is that no one really knows anything. You're chasing something you can never actually get hold of. So here's the bizarre thing. Everything the teacher is going to say in the rest of this book is going to make you sadder. It's not going to resolve anything. You get that warning here right at the start. By the way, if you read this book, it's going to make you sad. It's going to bring you grief and sorrow. Which means that if pursuing wisdom is pointless and doing it brings you sorrow, Ecclesiastes itself is pointless. It's just a jumble of observations and thoughts and ideas. It's a set of conclusions drawn from human experience, human wisdom, and religious observance. This teacher thought that he could work it all out on his own, but all his efforts were pointless. And that's what Ecclesiastes shows us. It's all just chasing the wind. Here's the other little phrase that keeps recurring. Under the sun. Under the sun. Wisdom is pointless because it's predicated on the wearisome truth of verse 8. Have a look at verse 8. Everything's wearisome beyond description. No matter how much we see, we're never satisfied. No matter how much we hear, we are not content. The more we know, the more we realise we don't know. In the words of Mick Jagger, we can't get no satisfaction. Our dissatisfaction with the limits of our knowledge has given rise to exploration and scientific endeavour. We're sending probes to the moon and to Mars and to the edge of the solar system and beyond. But our only hope to find meaning can't come from the human race because we can never know everything. And so Ecclesiastes is the ultimate gravestone epitaph to the limits of human wisdom. Although mentioned many times, the God in Ecclesiastes isn't quite the same as in the rest of the Bible, including Proverbs, the other book attributed to Solomon. He's never called Yahweh, the Lord. You know, every time you get the Lord in capital letters, that's his Hebrew name, Yahweh. And in fact, you could delete every reference to God from Ecclesiastes and come to exactly the same conclusions. It's not that the author's observations on life are wrong. Quite the opposite, actually, I think. But what they do is they show you what happens when the Lord, everything that he is, everything that he says, everything he's done, is not part of the equation. The result is meaninglessness. There is no point to life except working hard enough, but not too hard, to feel as if you've achieved something. And then eating and drinking well enough to enjoy yourself at the end of the day. That's what he'd say. In fact, he says it 4 or 5 times in Ecclesiastes. But again, more of that later, another week. And so it might be that you come to this book of Ecclesiastes with the expectation that because it's in the Bible, it must be what God thinks. It must be what the Lord thinks. Or it gives us an insight into God's wisdom. You know, after all, didn't this same Solomon ask God for wisdom in 1 Kings 3? And wasn't God pleased to give it to him? Yes. But that is not the whole story. Solomon was also surprisingly foolish. He had 700 wives and 300 mistresses. Enough to keep any man busy for a few years. I'm not going to say that one wife is enough. I'm not going to say that. So don't quote me on that. No wonder he found everything wearisome beyond description. He must have been exhausted. We're told in 1 Kings 11 that these wives and mistresses, they led him astray, turning his heart away from the Lord, convincing him to play hooky with other gods. Could this book be the product of his increasingly distant relationship with God, with the Lord? Let me put it another way. I just can't imagine Jesus ever saying, for example, everything is meaningless. Or like the teacher does in chapter 7 and verse 28, only 1 in 1,000 men is virtuous, but not one woman. What a cheeky thing to say. Or, there is nothing better for people in this world than to eat, drink and enjoy life. Of course, that's what Jesus would say, isn't it? No. No, that's not what Jesus would say. Ecclesiastes gives you a skewed or a partial perspective on life. A human view of how the world works. Looking up at heaven, if you like, from under the sun. That's where that phrase comes in. Looking up at heaven from under the sun. Looking around you from under the sun. And you can't find meaning in life from under the sun, because you can never know everything. The only place, the only way you can find meaning is from the heavens above it. that's where you find your meaning. Ecclesiastes is a hard book. We've covered quite a lot of ground, so let me just help, I hope, by retracing our steps. Firstly, we talked about how life seems meaningless because nothing really ever changes. Then secondly, we've seen how pursuing human wisdom is pointless because the more you know, the less content you are. And thirdly, I'm suggesting that contentment must lie in being satisfied that there is somebody who does know everything and who therefore can tell you what life means. When Jesus came into the world, he made some great statements about life. And you'll know this one, I'm sure. He said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father," in other words, no one comes to God, "except through me." That's John 14, verse 6. No one comes to the Father except through me. That word, "except," makes the statement exclusive. It excludes any other option, which can't be true unless you know that all the other options don't work. Yeah? You can't say that. If I said to you, "You can't get to London except using the M6, you'd say, "Yes, you can." And I'd have to concede you were right. Jesus says you can't get to God except through me. So does Jesus know everything? How could he, if he's just another man? The Bible says he's not. This is an enormous claim for Jesus to make. What about that other bit, where he says, "I'm the way, the truth, and the life"? It seems to imply that the root, the way, the realization, the truth, and the result, the life, are all dependent on him. "I am the way, the truth, and the life," he says. "I am those things." The teacher thought that he could reach the same result, life, meaning, by studying, that was his way, human wisdom, that was his truth. But he failed. So Jesus is claiming to be everything that this guy wanted and never found. In Jesus, that heroic quest would be over and he could finally rest content. If the proof that life is meaningless was that nothing was truly new, the proof that life is not meaningless with Jesus is that there is so much that is new. The New Testament talks about these things either happening through or being given by Jesus. And I'm saying these in no particular order. A new birth, a new covenant, a new creation, new lives, a new heaven and a new earth, new teaching, new bodies, a new way of the Spirit, and a new commandment. That's 10 to start with. These are things that God is doing. And God says anew. I went and bought some new slippers on Wednesday. Sadly, I can't escape the fact that I'm now middle-aged. I bought them because my old ones were falling apart. The point of buying new ones wasn't to buy ones which were falling apart just like the old ones were. New meant new. New doesn't necessarily mean there's never been anything like it before. New means like the old, but different and better. That's what new means. History will repeat itself. My new slippers will one day fall apart. But all of those new things Jesus brings will not need to be replaced again. They will be new and permanently new. The teacher said in verse 15, "What's wrong cannot be made right, and what's missing cannot be recovered." But that is simply not true with Jesus. What is impossible with us is not impossible with God. All those new things that Jesus brings are God making right what was wrong and recovering what was lost. And unless he does that, then there's no hope. But because he has, there is. There is hope and meaning because there is something new through Jesus. I'm going to let you into a secret. I'm an introvert. But you never guessed that, did you? When I first started preaching 12 or 13 years ago, I found standing up in front of people, doing the preparation for the message and all of that, so emotionally exhausting, so against my character, if you like, that I used to burst into tears afterwards and then go home and collapse in a heap. Another time at college, we did a personality test. This was at Bible College. And I thought I'd failed it. That's a joke, by the way. But in a sense, it's not, actually, because I got really upset when I realised I would never be the life and soul of the party. That is just not me. What was that, Stephen? You're right. No idea. Is the mic still on or is it off? Is the mic still on? Yeah? Good. I had to accept my limitations. And I would say, I would argue, that the hardest, but possibly the most significant thing you can do is accept your limitations. You might wish that you were a king or a queen, someone like Solomon, who has pretty much no limits to doing, achieving, obtaining anything and everything you could possibly ever want. But he found that the very thing that he prized most highly, namely wisdom, could never set his mind at ease. It would never satisfy him. He would never be content. He shows us that in Ecclesiastes, but his grief, in a topsy-turvy way, then does us a huge favour. And this is why I think it's in the Bible. It shows us that you don't need to be like Solomon. You don't need to be Solomon in order to find what you're looking for. You don't need to be rich. You don't need to have power. You don't need to be clever. Those things don't bring meaning into your life. In fact, they may prove to be a curse, because that's what they were to Solomon. So accept your limitations. Accepting your limitations opens another door for you, the door to faith. You might be a Richard Dawkins type and declare that God doesn't exist. Fine, but there's two little problems for you. Number one, you are claiming to know more than you can possibly know. You're claiming to know everything. And you're trying to do so on the basis of using physical sciences to prove metaphysical, philosophical questions. Can't do it. Doesn't make sense. Secondly, you're removing any chance of finding meaning beyond a basic eat, sleep, reproduce biological formula. Because that's all you are. You're an eat, sleeper, reproducer. That is all that you do. But thankfully, that's not what the Bible says. Someone unknown to us finishes off the book of Ecclesiastes. If you have a Bible and you turn to chapter 12, you'll see that verse 8 there of chapter 12 says exactly as chapter 1 said, everything is meaningless, says the teacher, completely meaningless. That's the start of a little conclusion. Concluding section, alright, in which a great deal of scepticism is thrown on everything else the teacher has said in the previous 12 chapters. And it reaches its high point at the very end, verses 13 and 14. And they say this for us. That's the whole story. Here now is my final conclusion. Fear God and obey his commands, for this is everyone's duty. God will judge us for everything we do, including every secret thing, whether good or bad. Notice how this person brings everything back to God and the ways in which every person relates to God. And I want to suggest to you very strongly this morning that our limitations are a good reason to trust in God, and not just any God, but the God of the Bible. I put it to you that our Creator, being the source of our life, is the centre of our existence. and that our existence is therefore not tragic or meaningless. It finds its fulfillment only in an active relationship with God. And that we discover who God is through Jesus Christ. And we discover what God desires for us through Jesus Christ. It doesn't take money, power, or cleverness. It takes humility. And it brings not grief, but joy to your soul. So I've created a couple of questions for you to talk through. Let's see if Stefan's managed. Fantastic, thank you very much. What do people think the point of life is? What about you? And if God is there, what meaning does this bring to our lives? So what I want you to do is just turn to the person next to you or people next to you. I don't mind whether it's 2, 3, 4, however you're sitting really. Move if you need to go and chat to somebody else. But just spend a few minutes talking about these questions, all right? Because this is essentially what Ecclesiastes is all about.